The 33rd Sunday of Ordinary Time. A reading from the Holy Gospel according to Luke, chapter 21, verses 5 to 19. When some were talking about the temple, remarking how it was adorned with fine stonework and votive offerings, Jesus said, "All these things you are staring at now, the time will come when not a single stone will be left on another. Everything will be destroyed." And they put this question to him. "Master," they said, "when will this happen then, and what sign will there be that this is about to take place?" "Take care not to be deceived," he said, "because many will come using my name and saying, 'I am he,' and 'the time is at hand.' Refuse to join them. And when you hear of wars and revolutions, do not be frightened, for this is something that must happen, but the end is not so soon." Then he said to them, "Nation will fight against nation, and kingdom against kingdom. There will be great earthquakes and plagues and famines here and there. There will be fearful sights and great signs from heaven. But before all this happens, men will seize you and persecute you. They will hand you over to the synagogues and to imprisonment and bring you before kings and governors because of my name. And that will be your opportunity to bear witness. Keep this carefully in mind. You are not to prepare your defense, because I myself shall give you an eloquence and a wisdom that none of your opponents will be able to resist or contradict. You will be betrayed even by parents and brothers, relations and friends, and some of you will be put to death. You will be hated by all men on account of my name, but not a hair of your head will be lost. Your endurance will win you your lives."
It is Wednesday of Passion Week. Jesus has just delivered a scathing address to the scribes and Pharisees, decrying their hypocrisy for teaching but not practicing the laws of charity and justice. Jesus is clearly tired and hot, both because of his long thundering speech and because of the sultriness of the windless day. Pressed against the wall by a multitude of people, he is avidly gazed upon by thousands. He feels all the hatred of those who are listening to him under the porches of the court of the Gentiles, and also all the love, or at least the admiration, surrounding him. Indifferent to the sun blazing down on backs and reddened, perspiring faces, he really looks exhausted. He needs solace, and he seeks it, saying to his apostles and to the 72 disciples who, like wedges, have opened a passage through the crowd and who are now on the front line, forming a faithful, loving barrier around him, he says, "Let us leave the temple and go out into the open among trees. I am in need of shade, silence, and fresh air." This place really seems to be already burning with the fire of celestial wrath. They elbow their way with difficulty and are able to go out through the nearest gate, where Jesus, in vain, strives to dismiss the many people. They want to follow him at all costs. In the meantime, the disciples are watching the cube of the temple shining in the sun as it is almost midday, and John of Ephesus points out the powerful construction to the master, saying, "Look at the size of the stones and of the construction." Jesus replies, "And yet not a single stone here will be left on another." "No? When? How?" ask many. But Jesus does not say anything. Later that day, Jesus and the apostles are walking away from Jerusalem. They sit down on a slope of the Mount of Olives in front of the temple, kissed by the setting sun. Jesus looks fixedly and sorrowfully at that place. The others are proud of its beauty, but a veil of worry left by the words of the Master is spread on their pride. What if that beauty should really perish? Peter and John speak to each other and then whisper something to James of Alphaeus and Andrew, who nod agreement. Then Peter addresses the Master, saying, "Let us go aside and you can explain to us when your prophecy of the destruction of the temple will take place. Daniel mentions it, and if things were as he says and as you say, the temple would exist for only a few more hours. But we do not see any armies or preparations for war, so when will it happen? What will be the sign? You have come. You say that you are about to go away, and yet it is known that it will happen only when you are among men. So, will you come back? When will you come back? Tell us so that we may know." "It is necessary to go aside," says Jesus. "See, the most faithful disciples have remained, those who will be of great help to you 12. They may hear the words that I'll speak to you." And he shouts the last words to gather them all together. "Come near me, all of you." The disciples, scattered on the slope, come near the others and they listen. Jesus says, "Take care that no one deceives you in the future. I am their Christ and there will be no other Christs. So when many will come and say to you, 'I am the Christ,' and they will deceive many others, do not believe those words, even if they are accompanied by wonders. Satan, the father of falsehood and the protection of liars, assists his servants and followers with false wonders, which, however, can be recognized as not being good ones because they are always joined to fear, perturbation, and falsehood. You know the wonders of God. They give holy peace, joy, health, faith, and they lead to holy desires and deeds. The others do not. So ponder on the forms and consequences of the wonders you may see in future performed by the false Christs. All those false Christs will clothe themselves in the garments of saviors of people, whereas they are wild beasts who ruin them. You will hear also of wars and rumours of wars, and they will say to you, 'These are the signs of the end.' Do not be upset. It will not be the end. All this must happen before the end, but it is not yet the end. People will rise against people, kingdom against kingdom, nation against nation, continent against continent. And plagues, famines, and earthquakes will follow in many places. But this is only the beginning of the birth pangs. They will then bring affliction upon you and will kill you, accusing you of being guilty of their suffering and hoping to get out of it by persecuting and destroying my servants. Men will always accuse the innocent of being the cause of the evil that they, the sinners, procure for themselves. They accuse God himself, perfect innocence and supreme goodness, of being the cause of their suffering. And they will do the same with you, and you will be hated on account of my name. It is Satan who instigates them." At another time, much earlier in his public life, Jesus talks to his apostles of the times which will come. He says, "In those days they will arrest you, and laying hands on you, they will drag you before law courts, garrison commanders and kings, to judge and condemn you for the great sin, in the eyes of the world, of being the servants of God the ministers and guardians of good, the masters of virtue. For that same reason you will be scourged and punished in many ways and even killed, and you will give testimony of me to kings, garrison commanders, nations, confessing with your blood that you love Christ, the true Son of the true God. When you are in their hands, do not worry about what you have to reply and what you have to say. Do not grieve, then, for anybody else but the judges and accusers, led astray by Satan to the extent of becoming blind to the truth. You will be given the words to be spoken at the time. Your Father will put them on your lips, because it is not you who will be speaking to convert people to your faith and profess the truth, but it will be the Spirit of the Father who will be speaking in you. Brother will then betray brother to death, and the father his child, and children will rise up against their parents and have them put to death. Do not be shocked or scandalized. Tell me, according to you, is it a greater crime to kill a father, a son, a brother, or to kill God himself? God cannot be killed, replies Judas Iscariot sharply. That is true, he is an invincible spirit, confirms Bartholomew. And the others, although they do not speak, are all of the same opinion. I am God and I am flesh, says Jesus calmly. No one is thinking of killing you, retorts the Iscariot. And Jesus says, please reply to my question, which is the greater crime? Oh, of course, it's a graver crime to kill God. Well, God will be killed by man in the flesh of the man God and in the souls of the murderers of the man God. So, as they will go so far as committing that crime without the murderers being horrified by it, so the crimes of fathers, brothers and children against children, brothers and fathers will be committed. You will be hated by all men on account of my name, but he who stands firm until the end will be saved. When they persecute you in one town, take refuge in the next one, not out of cowardice, but to give time for the newborn Church of Christ to reach the age, not of a weak, incapable, unweaned child, but an older age in which it will be able to face life and death without being afraid of death. Those who are advised by the Spirit to flee, let them flee, as I fled when a child. Truly, all the complexities of my earthly life will be repeated in my church, all of them, from the mystery of its formation to the humbleness of the early times, to the disturbance and snares brought about by cruel people, and to the necessity of fleeing to continue to live. All of them, from poverty and unremitting work, and to many more events that I am living now, that I will suffer later, before reaching my eternal triumph. On the other hand, let those remain who are advised by the Spirit to remain. Even if they are killed, they will live and be useful to the church, because what the Spirit of God advises is always good. In a separate dictation to Maria Valtorta, Jesus has a message for Pope Pius XII concerning the state of the church. He says, remember John's apocalypse. Remember the dragon, the evil one begetting the future Antichrist, who prepares the dragon's kingdom, not only by unsettling consciences, but by sweeping away a third of the stars in his coils and turning the stars into mire. When this demoniacal vintage takes place in Christ's court, among the leading figures in his church, it will happen in the light which has been reduced to a bare glimmer, and preserved as the only lamp in the hearts of Christ's faithful. For the light cannot die, as I have promised, and the church, even in periods of horror, will preserve just that amount needed to become radiance again after the trial. Then the idle shepherd shall come, who shall be and shall remain where his master's will. Let whoever has ears to understand, understand. For those alive at that time, death will be a blessing. Later that day, Jesus says to Maria, I think I have repeated a number of times that one either believes or does not believe, that my time is not measured by your measure, and that those who believe without demanding proofs will be blessed. From the reading of the Gospels, wouldn't it seem that the end of the world follows shortly after the destruction of Jerusalem? But how many centuries have elapsed since then? And yet the end of the world will be preceded by the signs I speak of, which have already seemed to be close on so many occasions, to your ignorance and to your fear. I alone know the moment they will begin, and I do not deem it necessary to say when. This will be out of goodness also towards those living at that time. Doesn't my John, the most enlightened one, to whom the heavens were made known with panoramas of events to come, which are known only to God and to whom my heart was opened with all the most secret secrets, doesn't John end the book, which is so sublime that it seems to have been written with a pen seized from an archangel, doesn't he end the book with the words, The time is close. Behold, I am coming soon. The one who attests to these things says, Yes, I am coming soon. Now then, I say the same words to you as my saints said. Before the Lord, one day is like 1,000 years, and 1,000 years one day. It is not that the Lord is delaying, but he uses patience.